34. On the Sarnia Heights, in the heat of the day, an elephant stood under the wide branches of a wild fig tree. He was asleep on his feet, but his head was propped up by two long columns of stained ivory. He slept as an old man sleeps, fitfully, never sinking very deep below the level of consciousness. Occasionally the tattered grey ears flapped, and each time a fine haze of flies rose around his head. They hung in the hot air and then settled again. The rims of the elephant's ears were raw where the flies had eaten down through the thick skin. And the flies were everywhere. The humid green shade beneath the wild fig was murmurous with the sound of their wings. Across the divide of the Sarnia Heights, 4 miles from the spot where the old bull slept, 3 men were moving up one of the bush-choked gullies towards the ridge. Mohammed was leading. He moved fast, half-crouched to peer at the ground, glancing up occasionally to anticipate the run of the spoor he was following. He stopped at a place where a grove of mapundu trees had carpeted the ground beneath them with a stinking, jellified mass of rotten berries. He looked back at the 2 white men and indicated the marks in the earth and the pyramid of bright yellow dung that lay upon it. "He stopped here for the first time in the heat, but it was not to his liking, and he has gone on." Flynn was sweating. It ran down his flushed jowls and dripped onto his already sodden shirt. "Yes," he nodded, and a small cloudburst of sweat scattered from his head at the movement. "He will have crossed the ridge." "What makes you so certain?" Sebastian spoke, in the same sepulchral whisper as the others. "The cool evening breeze will come from the east. He will cross to the other side of the ridge to wait for it." Flynn spoke with irritation and wiped his face on the short sleeve of his shirt. "Now, just you remember, Bassie, this is my elephant, you understand that? You try for it, and so help me, I'll shoot you dead." Flynn nodded to Mohammed, and they moved on up the slope, following the spoor that meandered between outcrops of grey granite and scrub. The crest of the ridge was well defined, sharp as the spine of a starving ox. They paused below it, squatting to rest in the coarse brown grass. Flynn opened the binocular case that hung on his chest, lifted out the instrument and began to polish the lens with a scrap of cloth. "Stay here," Flynn ordered the other two, then on his belly he wriggled up towards the skyline. Using the cover of a tree stump, he lifted his head cautiously and peered over. Below him, the Sarnia Heights fell away at a gentle slope, 1,500 feet and 10 miles to the plain below. The slope was broken and crenellated, riven into 1,000 gullies and ravines, covered over all with a mantle of coarse brown scrub and dotted with clumps of bigger trees. Flynn settled himself comfortably on his elbows and lifted the binoculars to his eyes. Systematically, he began to examine each of the groves below him. "Yes," he whispered aloud, wriggling a little on his belly, staring at the picture puzzle beneath the spread branches of the tree 1 mile away. In the shade there were shapes that made no sense, a mass too diffuse to be the trunk of the tree. He lowered the glasses and wiped away the sweat that clung in his eyebrows. He closed his eyes to rest them from the glare, then he opened them again and lifted the glasses. For 2 long minutes he stared before suddenly the puzzle made sense. The bull was standing half away from him, merging with the trunk of the wild fig, the head and half the body obscured by the lower branches of the tree, and what he had taken to be the stem of a lesser tree was, in fact, a tusk of ivory. A spasm of excitement closed on his chest. "Yes," he said, "yes." Flynn planned his stalk with care, taking every precaution against the intervention of fate that 20 years of elephant hunting had taught him. He had gone back to where Sebastian and Mohammed waited. "He's there," he told them. "Can I come with you?" Sebastian pleaded. "In a barrel you can," snarled Flynn, as he sat and pulled off his heavy boots to replace them with the light sandals that Muhammad produced from the pack. "You stay here until you hear my shot. You so much as stick your nose over the ridge before that, and so help me God, I'll shoot it off." When Muhammad knelt in front of Flynn and strapped the leather pads to his knees to protect them as he crawled over rock and thorn, Flynn fortified himself from the gin bottle. As he re-corked it, he glowered at Sebastian again. "That's a promise," he said. At the top of the ridge, Flynn paused again with only his eyes lifting over the skyline while he plotted his stalk, fixing in his memory a procession of landmarks. An anthill, an outcrop of white quartz, a tree festooned with weaver birds' nests. So that, as he reached each of these, he would know his exact position in relation to that of the elephant. Then, with the rifle cradled across the crook of his elbows, he slid on his belly and began the stalk. Now, an hour after he had left the ridge, he saw before him through the grass a slab of granite like a headstone in an ancient cemetery. It stood square and weathered brown, and it was the end of the stalk. He had marked it from the ridge as the point from which he would fire. It stood 50 yards from the wild fig tree at a right angle from the old bull's position. It would give him cover as he rose to his knees to make the shot. Anxious now, suddenly overcome with a premonition of disaster, sensing that somehow the cup would be dashed from his lips, the maid plucked from under him before the moment of fulfilment, Flynn started forward. Slithering towards the granite headstone, his face set hard in nervous anticipation, he reached the rock. He rolled carefully onto his side, and holding the heavy rifle against his chest, he slipped the catch across and eased the rifle open so that the click of the mechanism was muted. From the belt around his waist, he selected 2 fat cartridges and examined the brass casings for tarnish or denting. With relief, he saw the fingers that held them were steadier. He slipped the cartridges into the blank eyes of the breechers and then slid home against the settings with a soft metallic plong. And now his breathing was faintly ragged at the end of each inhalation. He closed the rifle and with his thumb pushed the safety catch forward into the fire position. His shoulder against the rough, sun-heated granite, he drew up his legs against his belly and rolled gently onto his knees. With his head bowed low and the rifle in his lap, he knelt behind the rock, and for the first time in an hour he lifted his head. He brought it up with inching deliberation. Slowly, the crystalline texture of the granite passed before his eyes, then suddenly he looked across 50 yards of open ground at his elephant. It stood broadside to him, but the head was hidden by the leaves and branches of the wild fig. The brain shot was impossible from here. His eyes moved down onto the shoulder, and he saw the outline of the bone beneath the thick, grey skin. He picked out the point of the elbow, and his eyes moved back into the barrel of the chest. He could visualize the heart pulsing softly there beneath the ribs, pink and soft and vital, throbbing like a giant sea anemone. He lifted the rifle and laid it across the rock in front of him. He looked along the barrels and saw the blade of dry grass that was wound around the bead of the foresight, obscuring it. He lowered the rifle and, with his thumbnail, picked away the shred of glass. Again, he lifted and sighted. The black blob of the foresight lay snugly in the deep, wide V of the backsight. He moved the gun, riding the bead down across the old bull's shoulder, then back onto the chest. It lay there, ready to kill, and he took up the slack and the trigger gently, lovingly, with his forefinger. The shout was faint, a tiny shout in the drowsy immensity of the hot African air. It came from the high ground above him, "Flynn!" and again, "Flynn!" In an explosive burst of movement under the wild fig tree, the old bull swung his body with unbelievable speed, his great tusks riding high. He went away from Flynn at an awkward shambling run, his flight covered by the trunk of the fig tree. For stunned seconds, Flynn crouched behind the boulder, and with each second the chances of a shot dwindled. Flynn jumped to his feet and ran out to one side of the fig tree, opening his field of fire for a snapshot at the bull as he fled, a try for the spine, where it curved down between the massive haunches to the tuftless tail. Spiked agony stabbed up through the ball of his lightly shod foot as he trod squarely on a 3-inch buffalo thorn. Red-tipped, wickedly barbed, it buried its full length in his flesh, and he stumbled to his knees, crying a protest at the pain. 200 yards away, the old bull disappeared into one of the wooded ravines and was gone. Flynn! Flynn! Sobbing in pain and frustration, his injured foot twisted up into his lap, Flynn sat in the grass and waited for Sebastian Oldsmith to come down to him. "I'll let him get real close," Flynn told himself. Sebastian was approaching with the long, awkward strides of a man running downhill. He had lost his hat, and the black, tangled curls danced on his head at either side. He was still shouting. "I'll give it to him in the belly," Flynn decided. "Both barrels!" And he groped for the rifle that lay beside him. Sebastian saw him and swerved in his run. Flynn hefted the rifle. "I warned him, I said I'd do it." And his right hand settled down around the pistol grip of the rifle, his forefinger instinctively hooking forward for the trigger. "Flynn! Germans! A whole army of them just over the hill! Coming this way!" "Christ!" said Flynn, immediately abandoning his homicidal intentions.